The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the special report headline, Faces to Watch. In a market packed with innovative thinkers, here are some key players to watch in 2026. And the special report begins inside the Triangle Business Journal, beginning with Robert Furrell, who is tasked with rebuilding Wolfspeed through diversification. And there are 10 of these profiles that we'll read. Wolfspeed CEO Robert Furrell has a big task. Less than a year into his tenure, he faced a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, layoffs, a management reorganization, and a complete board shakeup. And now he has to deliver real change. Furrell's predecessor, Greg Lowe, had targeted the EV industry, but Furrell's plan is broader. He's working to expand into new verticals such as AI infrastructure and defense systems, and he's reorganized the sales team accordingly. The silicon carbide material Wolfspeed develops has applications across sectors, from data centers to wind turbines. Instead of putting all eggs in the EV basket, Furrell told Triangle Business Journal, he wants to spread out the potential. If you're a one-trick pony like in the past, that's just very, very dangerous, he said in November. At the same time, he's talking to Washington, D.C. Wolfspeed's CHIPS Act deal was vacated during its bankruptcy, but under President Donald Trump, the CHIPS office has been making moves. Recently, for example, Vulcan Elements revealed it's getting a $50 million CHIPS incentive to bring a rare earth magnet facility to Johnston County. Could there be opportunities for Wolfspeed 2.0? Maybe, Furrell told TBJ, though he said the firm's financial plan doesn't depend on CHIPS dollars, but he sees the materials Wolfspeed creates as critical to national security, particularly for the domestic supply chain. Do you really want to be dependent on some other country manufacturing critical infrastructure components? He said. Furrell has met with lawmakers from both parties, including Senator Tom Tillis and Senator Chuck Schumer. The stakes for Wolfspeed's success are extremely high. The state is a backer of sorts, having supported Wolfspeed's $5 billion factory in Siler City with an incentives package the company is now unlikely to ever see. The factory, once expected to create 1,800 jobs in Chatham County, is largely empty. Furrell said it will remain that way until demand exists to get all the lines up and running. We are very disciplined when it comes to capital spending, he said. 2025 was a reset year for Wolfspeed, focused on tackling debt and finding a path forward. 2026 will be about delivery, whether Furrell can sell new verticals on the company's promise, and whether the decades-old NC State University spinoff can finally deliver on its original goal to change the world. And that was written by Lauren Onasorge. The next profile is written by Zach Ezone. It's concerning Robert Furrell, there's also a closer look section. Interesting fact, Furrell is a cyclist. Biggest challenge, securing trust post-bankruptcy. Key number, 70%. That's how much the firm reduced its debt by through its restructuring. Okay, now we'll move on to Zach Ezone's article concerning Charlie Gayer. Gayer steps in as CEO after Stonehouse's long run. A biotechnology company in the research Triangle Park has new leadership as it advances what it hopes can become a blockbuster drug. Charlie Gayer became CEO of BioCryst Pharmaceuticals on January 1, succeeding a longtime leader, John Stonehouse. The change comes at a crucial time for the biotech, which focuses on rare diseases. Gayer has been the chief commercial officer since 2020, leading the rollout of BioCryst's lead product, ORLADEYO. This is an oral treatment for the prevention of hereditary angioedema, or HAE, a rare disorder characterized by episodes of severe swelling. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the oral therapy in 2020. Last year, BioCryst reported $438 million in ORLADEYO revenue. It is expecting sales to reach up to $600 million this year. The FDA initially approved the oral capsule formulation of ORLADEYO for patients 12 years and older. Then, BioCryst developed a formulation of ORLADEYO to allow the drug to be delivered in small pellets, about the size of sprinkles, that patients can take directly with a drink or sprinkled over a spoonful of soft, non-acidic food. The federal agency approved this formulation in December, expanding Orladeyo's label to children between the ages of 2 and younger than 12. Geyer joined BioCryst in 2015 as Vice President of Global Strategic Marketing. Earlier in his career, he spent time at Tailcrest Biotherapeutics and at GlaxoSmithKline. Geyer also has helped shape BioCryst's recent business development strategy, including a deal to sell European operations to Italy's Neopharmed Gentili for $250 million up front and up to $14 million in future milestones. BioCryst is also in the process of closing a major deal that would further strengthen its position in the HAE market. It is acquiring Astria Therapeutics of Boston in a cash and stock deal valued at $700 million. Astria is developing an injectable therapy for HAE called Navenibart. BioCryst says the acquisition complements Orladeyo. Currently, about 70-80% of patients using a leading injectable therapy for HAE require dosing every 2 weeks, Geyer said in October. Astria is developing Navenibart with a potential 3-to-6-month administration schedule, which could be an attractive option for patients who prefer to remain on an injectable therapy. With the two products together, we believe our HAE portfolio could drive double-digit revenue, annual revenue growth that will reach $1.8 billion by 2033, Geyer said regarding Orladeyo and Navenibart. And in a closer look, fun fact, Geyer earned his MBA at Duke University. Biggest challenge? Closing BioCryst's $700 million acquisition of Astria Therapeutics. Interesting number. BioCryst believes Orladeyo can reach peak sales of $1 billion by 2029. And our next profile is of Jennifer Lance and her years of work set up Wilson for success. This is written by Ben Tobin. 2026 is set to be a pivotal year for Wilson County and its eponymous largest city, which is far from its glory days of being a tobacco hub, but is looking to come back. And Jennifer Lance of Wilson County Economic Development Corporation, one of the most successful economic development leaders in North Carolina this decade, will play an essential role. In the last few years, we've gotten more high-skilled jobs and medium-skilled jobs than low-skilled jobs, Lance said during a TBJ event in April. Every year, we go after the type of industry that makes sense for our community. The other thing we look for with every job is to pay a living wage. So we're not looking at $12 per hour jobs. We're looking at $22 per hour or better. In 2024, many big wins came for Lance, whom Bob Pike, head of the Carolinas Gateway Partnership, calls the Queen of Economic Development. These included pet healthcare innovation company IDEX Laboratories creating a $147 million, 275 job plant in Wilson, Reckitt Benckiser, the maker of Mucinex, planning a $146 million, 289 job facility in Wilson, and Scott Pharma unveiling plans to invest $371 million in a factory to create 400 jobs. Biggest of all was when Janssen Biotech, a Johnson & Johnson subsidiary, announced a $2 billion investment in Wilson County for a new pharmaceutical manufacturing campus with plans for 420 jobs. Construction on the facility is expected to be complete in 2028. These wins are huge for Wilson County, as population trends have not been on its side. The county's population of less than 79,000 is slightly less than it was in 2010, and the North Carolina State Demographer's Office projects that Wilson County will grow by less than 600 over the next 25 years. In 2026, these projects will continue advancing, ramping up job creation and economic output for the eastern North Carolina city. Along with major economic development success, a new minor league baseball stadium opening in 2026, as well as hundreds of millions of dollars in downtown development, has spurred hope. And though Lance is always on the lookout for new projects, she said she is also selective. We have lots of opportunities, and for the first time, we have a choice, Lance said during the event in Wilson. Do we want this project? Is this project a good fit for Wilson? Eastern North Carolina has choices, and that's just a huge deal. And that was written by Ben Tobin. Our next article, written by Kaylee Thompson, is on Erica Leatham. She taps into Triangle's need for senior housing. While the commercial real estate market struggles, the residential real estate sector is booming, especially as the Triangle faces a continued housing shortage. Land is scarce and is being snapped up quickly. Erica Leatham, Corporate Director of Entitlements at Epcon Communities, has worked in land acquisition and entitlement roles for 18 years, including as a land use and zoning attorney. Through her role at Epcon, though her role at Epcon is fresh, she was with M&I Homes for nearly 7 years before that, and was key in obtaining large pieces of land around the Triangle, especially in the hard-to-get and hot towns of Cary and Apex. She was behind several residential developments that brought thousands of homes to the Triangle, and many times that included successfully getting the land rezoned first. She is the only woman serving on the Urban Land Institute Triangle Governance Committee and is the chair of the ULI Triangle Leadership Committee, a role she took on over the summer. She's also part of the Triangle Community Coalition, where she previously served as chair. Leatham is an advocate for mentoring younger people in land use and zoning, particularly women. She is heavily involved in two land organizations, Ladies in Land Raleigh Chapter and Women in Land Development. She is passionate about encouraging women to become experts in their roles in land and helps them climb the ladder instead of pursuing different roles, since real estate development is still a male-dominated field. With her newest position, she'll be even more hands-on with residential development. Leatham will continue to get to be involved in land use and zoning, but will also be key in working with municipalities to get Epcon's proposed residential communities approved. Along with that, she will work with internal teams and external contractors to coordinate and maintain a budget and timeline for each project in the Triangle. Since Epcon is targeting Raleigh for its communities geared towards seniors and is looking to increase its product in the region, Leatham will be key in helping address the housing needs for residents 55 and up. Some communities are already in the works, while some are still going through the rezoning process. 2026 will be the year to keep an eye on Leatham and her work to bring even more housing to the Triangle via Epcon communities. And next we have Mark Lukowski. He sees opportunities in Sanford and other emerging markets. Oh, I'm sorry. Once again, for Erica Leatham, her closer look. Interesting fact, only woman on the ULI Triangle Governance Committee. Biggest challenge, finding large tracts of land, of undeveloped land in the Triangle that are serviced by water and sewer. And key number 274, the number of homes Epcon will start construction on in 2026. Okay, now we move on to Mark Lukowski, and this is written by Ben Tobin. If you randomly look at any large residential development in the Sanford area, chances are Mark Lukowski had something to do with it. Lukowski, a real estate developer and investor, predominantly works behind the scenes in assembling and entitling land. His first large deal in Sanford came roughly 7 years ago when he put together land for 78 North and South, neighborhoods that combined for roughly 350 lots and were picked up by home builders Smith Douglas Homes and McKee Homes. That deal kind of just set me off and running, Lukowski said in a recent conversation with TBJ. Lukowski has worked with household names in residential real estate development in North Carolina, from Roy Mashburn to Roy Covington, and in 2026, he will continue embarking on his biggest partner yet, Contender Development, a real estate firm based out of South Carolina that is planning on delivering thousands of residential lots in the coming years. The Sanford developer said he first started working with Contender when he sold the group the first pieces of land for Ashby Village, which is set to have 350 lots off South Horner Boulevard in Sanford, for $10.5 million in December 2021. Over the years, Lukowski said he has had 8 deals with Contender Development. And these deals aren't just in Sanford. Whether it is the 500-acre, 1,300 residential unit Mallard Crossing development in Smithfield, the 3,600-home Midway Landing development in Brunswick County, or a 700-home community off 332 acres in Greenville. Lukowski has been Contender Development's go-to guy in North Carolina to assemble land for large housing projects. But as a Sanford resident, projects within the city are a particular point of pride for Lukowski. One that he is excited to get off the ground next year is Parkside Village, which he has worked on with Mashburn and will sit across Wicker Street from Kiwanis Family Park. Plans submitted to the Sanford Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee indicate that the development will have 127 single-family homes as well as 144 multifamily units. With this particular project, our interest is to do an upscale community, probably $400,000 to $600,000 homes, he said. The project will also entail the extension of a greenway trail to the Ingram Family YMCA off KM Wicker Memorial Drive. And in a closer look, interesting fact, Lukowski has become one of the most influential land assemblers in the region, putting together projects that have delivered or enabled well over 5,000 lots. Biggest challenge, meeting the needs of a growing development pipeline. And the key number, 8, the number of deals Lukowski has put together and sold to contender development. And next we have CJ Mann. He raises profile with new Raleigh development projects, and this is written by Kaylee Thompson. With 6 projects either under construction or set to begin, 2026 is shaping up to be a big year for CJ Mann and Raleigh Raised Development. Mann, co-founder and chief business development officer at Raleigh Raised, is driving the growth at the young development company alongside fellow co-founders Lavelle Moten and Terrell Midget. In the 5 years since the company was founded, Mann has helped bring about 9 projects, 2 of which are under construction, with the rest in the development pipeline. Cottages of Idlewild in downtown Raleigh and Holt at Oberlin near the Village District in Raleigh both broke ground in September. By the time 2026 ends, both projects should be nearing completion. The 2 projects will add 18 affordable for sale and rental homes and 9 luxury for sale townhomes to the city. At just 41, Mann has more than 10 years of construction management experience, including working as CEO for a right-of-way acquisition company and serving on the City of Raleigh's Planning Commission, a Parents Commission, and the Wake County Boys and Girls Club Board of Directors. He has high ambitions for himself and Raleigh Raised and wants to be a part of the transformative development happening in Raleigh. Part of that means striving for excellence in building the company's reputation within the community. The other part is expanding the company's reach beyond Raleigh and North Carolina and growing to build projects all along the East Coast. In late 2026, the company expects the residents to be moving into the townhomes in its Holt at Oberlin project. The company might have to eventually pick a lane if it wants to grow, as it currently has a project pipeline that includes luxury housing, affordable housing, elementary and middle schools, higher education, and mixed use. Because the company is small, about 10 employees, it has the ability to pivot and be flexible with the types of projects it chooses, especially because it does its own construction management of projects. It will be performing the construction for both the Idlewild and Oberlin projects. For now, Mann and his co-founders have to deliver on their first ever projects before it can look to build upon its anticipated success. And this was written by Kaylee Thompson. In the closer look, interesting fact, he has 2 dual bachelor's degrees and a master's. Biggest challenge, raising capital and knowing where best to apply it. Key number, more than $135 million in development costs for pipeline projects. And next we have Tammy Newcomb. She charts major headcount growth for Raliant's new Raleigh HQ. And this is written by Lauren Onisorge. Raleigh snagged a new public company in 2025, Raliant, and that's spelled R-A-L-L-I-A-N-T, a spinoff of Fortiv. And with it, the city scored a new CEO, Tammy Newcomb, who is tasked with building out the headquarters in North Hills. In March, Raliant chose Raleigh for its headquarters, a planned $2.1 million investment with the potential for 180 jobs, paying average salaries of nearly $190,000. In exchange, it's been approved for up to $3.3 million in incentives. Newcomb told TBJ earlier this year that 180 jobs is just the starting point. Expectations are high as she builds the company, which officially spun out in June. The technology company develops instruments used in the engineering industry, from motion control to pressure sensors to power grid monitoring, and it's building its team in the Triangle. Newcomb has already hired Neil Reynolds, previously chief financial officer at Wolfspeed. As of this month, there were 33 open positions on the firm's website for Raleigh across multiple business lines. Openings include paralegals, manufacturing technicians, machinists, and accounts receivable specialists. Newcomb said the firm picked Raleigh over places like Portland, Oregon, primarily due to its proximity to talent. She said the company sought cities with strong pools of engineers and technologists paired with a reputation for livability. Raleigh checked those boxes, not just for its university talent, but also for its community college system, she said. That will come into play in a big way in 2026. 2025 was about transitioning into a standalone company, but now that it's on its own, the new company has to deliver both on building its team and scoring customers. Newcomb told TBJ that in addition to points on a resume, she's looking for a culture match in new hires. Raelian has a continuous improvement culture, she said. We will be one team that wins together, she said earlier this year. We're going to be amping up the growth trajectory of these businesses, so we're looking for people who want to come in and unlock growth with us. The plan is to get 180 people in the next 3 years. Economic developers were particularly excited about its choice of Raleigh, as it's an office project, something that's been few and far between since the pandemic and the global shift toward remote work. Raelian's choice may have helped her, may have helped other technology companies eye Raleigh in a different way too, as the win was followed by BuildOps's decision to also invest in a Raleigh hub. And that was written by Lauren Onasorge. In a closer look, fun fact, Newcomb previously lived in the Triangle when she worked at IBM. Biggest challenge, building a Raleigh headquarters as a new company. And big number, $529 million, the amount Raelian reported in its third quarter revenue report at the end of September. And now we turn to our seventh profile, and this one's written by Kate Tracy, concerning Christopher Prieto, pitmaster, makes an impact in Knightdale and beyond. The accolades keep pouring in for pitmaster Christopher Prieto as he continues to raise the bar for barbecue both locally and nationally. Fresh off of landing one of the Triangle's three Michelin Bib Gourmand Awards, Prieto takes his role as ambassador of barbecue seriously, putting Knightdale on the culinary map across the country. In addition to the Michelin Guide recognition, Prieto landed a James Beard nomination for Best Chef Southeast earlier in 2025. Receiving the Michelin Bib Gourmand, a Michelin recognition for great food at a great value, has hiked sales and foot traffic for Prime Barbecue, as well as Prieto's food truck parked behind Prime, called Primo Latin Cuisine. The Prime team has been cooking more meat than ever to keep up with the out-the-door demand from barbecue enthusiasts, visitors, and locals alike. Despite the success in 2025, Prieto and his team of barbecue nerds keep aiming higher. In early 2026, Prieto will be debuting Prime STQ in Horseshoe at Hub RTP. It's a return to Prieto's earlier roots as he previously worked at Quintiles, now ICVIA, in the Research Triangle Park for 9 years before he took the risk to open Prime Barbecue in 2020. It took a year to negotiate a lease with Horseshoe at RTP developer White Point before he signed on to the project. It was a lot of courting because, you know, you don't mess with a barbecuer. We will outweigh you. We have more patience than anyone on earth because our cuisine takes time. Prieto previously said. Time will tell if that patience will pay off, as the highly anticipated restaurant has taken more than a year to open. The venue will marry the best of barbecue with steakhouse dishes and atmosphere to cater to families and executive business guests in RTP. I think we're of the caliber to get a Michelin star, Prieto said. Between opening a restaurant and operating his current restaurant and food truck, Primo Latin Cuisine, building community still stays high on Prieto's priority list. He's planning a bluegrass and barbecue festival this spring in Knightdale. Prieto has been at the forefront of a culinary awakening in eastern Wake County, and 2026 will be the year to see if more chefs and business owners will chase their dreams in towns like Wendell and Knightdale. And for a closer look, interesting fact, Prieto and some of his team members decided to get Bib Gourmand tattoos after their Michelin recognition, small ones, so that they can add Michelin stars in the future. Biggest challenge, getting a Michelin star. Only 4 barbecue restaurants, all in Texas, have them. And key number, 8,000, the square footage of Prime STQ opening in early 2026. And the next one we have is written by Zach Ezone, Christy Page, and Duke CEO. UNC, Duke Health Systems, have fresh leadership. The Triangle's two largest health systems are navigating leadership transitions at a crucial time. Dr. Christy Page officially became CEO of the health system and dean of UNC's School of Medicine on November 24 after serving on the school's faculty since 2005. The Carolina graduate had filled both roles on an interim basis after Dr. Wesley Burke stepped down earlier this year. The move comes as the health system faces financial and operational headwinds amid a statewide expansion effort. UNC Health earlier this year filed an application to develop a 129-bed hospital in Asheville at an estimated cost of $711 million. In the Triangle, it earlier this year filed an application to develop a new 50-bed acute care hospital in Wake Forest at an estimated cost of more than $485 million. The health system is also partnering with Duke Health to develop a children's hospital in Apex through the joint venture called North Carolina Children's Health. This is a nonprofit the health system's created to lead and operate the state's first freestanding children's hospital. The organization selected a 230-acre site within the enormous Viridia in Apex with the goal to start construction in 2027. The massive project requires Duke and UNC leaders to secure both state and philanthropic support. In 2023, the General Assembly allocated $320 million to UNC to support developing a children's hospital in the Triangle. North Carolina children's officials are advocating for additional funds, but lawmakers have not yet agreed on an amount. At Duke Health, Dr. Craig Albanese, the CEO since 2023, left in September to become president of Kaiser Permanente, the California-based system that provides both health coverage and medical care. Albanese has led Duke Health through a significant period of growth and transformation. Duke Health, which reported total operating revenue of $6.8 billion in fiscal year 2024, aims to become a $20 billion revenue health system, according to a recent financial filing. It is also expanding. Earlier this year, Duke proposed a change in its previously approved plans in Cary, adding another 120 beds to the future hospital. This would make it a 160-bed facility, projected. Duke earlier this year acquired Lake Norman Regional Medical Center in Mooresville for $284 million. The health systems are also preparing for sweeping changes to Medicaid. As thousands of North Carolinians lose access to health insurance, Medicaid cuts could result in UNC Health losing hundreds of millions in revenue, Page said. Duke estimates it could lose $1 billion over 5 years. And that was written by Zach Ezone. In a closer look, interesting fact, while a student at UNC, Page spent time working at a hospital in Zimbabwe. Biggest challenge? Medicaid cuts and other financial pressures in an increasingly competitive environment. And key number, Duke and UNC's joint children's hospital project is estimated to cost $3 billion. And our final, 10th and final profile, written by Kate Tracy, is of Michelle Thompson. Acquisitions roll on as Thompson targets growth for Cherry Beckert. In a year of significant mergers and acquisitions in the Triangle, Raleigh accounting firm Cherry Beckert, and that's B-E-K-A-E-R-T, Cherry's normal spelling, Cherry Beckert, has continued to stand out, keeping its acquisition streak on a fast clip at the helm of Cherry Beckert, whose headquarters are located in Glenwood Place at 3800 Glenwood Avenue, is Michelle Thompson. Cherry Beckert's partners elected her CEO in late 2017. In 2022, the firm struck an investment deal with private equity firm Parthenon Capital, which has fueled Cherry Beckert's growth into new markets ever since. Companies are attracted to Cherry Beckert for certain specializations or types of clients they serve, such as federal government contractors or fund audit and tax. For example, but oftentimes Cherry Beckert's acquisitions are geographically motivated, with the firm wanting to gain more of a foothold in certain parts of the country it has deemed desirable for growth. In October, Herbine and Company Incorporated of Pennsylvania was one such acquisition, as was the August acquisition of Jameson and Company CPAs of Massachusetts. The spring brought expansion out west with the acquisition of Spicer Jeffries of Denver. The three acquisitions in 2025 follow on the heels of two last December and six in 2023. We have a strategy we're trying to execute that does have a certain amount of M&A we're trying to do each year, Thompson previously said. Cherry Beckert now has approximately 2,800 employees and broke into accounting today's top 20 accounting firms. It was a big achievement for Thompson, given that the firm had remained stagnant in the 25th rank for the past 20 years. The firm's pro forma revenue climbed to approximately $800 million, which includes the full year revenue from the companies it acquired this year. Thompson, a TBJ Corporate Leadership Award winner in 2025, will need to navigate the challenges associated with attracting good talent in the coming year. She'll also need to strike the right balance between prioritizing people and also integrating technology, artificial intelligence into the firm's daily routines. I'm totally fascinated by it. I think it's such a positive for our industry. I think it's just moving faster than people thought it would move, she previously said. Even with an active M&A schedule, there's still plenty of room for growth for Cherry Beckert, as it was ranked number 13 on TBJ's list of largest accounting firms with 27 local CPAs. And in a closer look, interesting fact, Thompson enjoys true crime podcasts. Biggest challenge? Balancing people with technology, namely AI, and key number 800 million, approximately, 2025 pro forma revenue, which includes full year revenue of acquired companies. And now we turn to the top news story on the first page of the Triangle Business Journal, written by Kaylee Thompson. Charter school buys office building for $9 million, expanding academy snags a Durham office space that has been empty. As the office market struggles to make a full comeback in the Triangle, office buildings are being sold to buyers seeking new uses for the properties. The latest example is a public charter school planning its expansion into Durham. Triangle Math and Science Academy, or TMSA, paid $9 million for the Park City East office building in Durham near the Triangle Village Shopping Center, according to Durham County deed records. The office building at 2224 Highway 54 will become the future home of TMSA's Durham subcampus. TMSA will open the school for kindergarten through fifth grade in August, according to a news release. The campus eventually will support up to 900 students in kindergarten through eighth grade. The 77,274 square foot building will be converted into classrooms, science labs, a library, and gymnasium. In December, TMSA received a $5 million multi-year investment from the Charter School Growth Fund, a national nonprofit, to help support its expansion across the state. TMSA has three active schools in the Triangle, two in Apex and one in Cary, plus the new Durham campus and a future campus planned in West Raleigh. It has a total of 13 schools in the Triangle, Triad, and Charlotte that are open or in the pipeline. Situated on 7.5 acres, the Park City office, Park City East office building is part of a two-building office campus that JPB Raleigh Holdings redeveloped in 2024, including updating the interiors and adding several outdoor amenities. The Park City East building has been empty for 4 years. Two of those years were after the upgrades were complete. JPB paid $11.5 million for the two buildings in 2022. Park City West is 40% leased to the NC Department of Health and Human Services, but the agency plans to consolidate at the new headquarters on Blue Ridge Road in Raleigh. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Global Raleigh firm expanding to China. In growth mode since the pandemic, MERS Aesthetics looks to plunge into China. A growing firm based in Raleigh is expanding to a new market, China. MERS Aesthetics, based on Six Forks Road, has staffed up in the last 5 years, growing Raleigh headcount to 350. CEO Bob Radigan said interest has exploded since the pandemic. People were basically staring at each other on Zoom screens or staring at themselves, he said. At that point, interest in medical aesthetics spiked up. Two of the main products for MERS are Xeomin, X-E-O-M-I-N is the spelling on that, which treats facial lines, and Radiesse, spelled R-A-D-I-E-S-S-E, a dermal filler that smooths facial wrinkles. We called it a Zoom boom. We had a pretty significant uplift in terms of the market, Radigan said. The U.S. is roughly a third of the MERS market, with the Asia-Pacific slightly larger. Both Europe and Latin America are each roughly 15%. The success of Asia-Pacific, especially South Korea, has MERS seeing opportunities in China. MERS recently had its full portfolio approved by National Medical Products Administration, the Chinese equivalent of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Expanding will help close the gap on competitors such as AbbVie, which has $873 million in third-quarter revenue from its Botox division. Generally, MERS looks for markets where the average household annual income exceeds $75,000. And given the massive size of Chinese cities, MERS is optimistic about moving toward China and how it aligns to what MERS calls its fit to purpose. Overall population is at the starting point, he said. We look at what we consider to be interest in medical aesthetics, the propensity to engage in medical aesthetics procedure. He said that China, next to the U.S., is the largest aesthetics market in the world. This is basically green field for us, he said. Clayton Project targeted for its first Chick-fil-A, one of the hottest areas in the Triangle, appears to be in line for its first Chick-fil-A restaurant. The chicken chain has purchased 2.7 acres in the Flowers Plantation development in Johnston County for $1.8 million, according to deed records. The land is at the intersection of Highway 42 East and Southeast Flowers Parkway. Flowers Plantation is a 3,000-acre planned community east of Clayton. The community is unincorporated with a Clayton address. Investors see options in Chatham County. Chatham County continues to be one of the state's fastest-growing counties, so it's no surprise to see investors jumping in. In fact, a self-storage facility located at 8833 NC Highway 87501 has sold for $2.14 million, according to deed records. The buyer is Bright Highway 87, an LLC registered in Durham. According to property records, the sale includes a home as well as storage units for a total of roughly 41 acres. Self-storage units have seen high buyer interest in growing counties. Southern Pines Brewery ends five-year run. Yet another craft brewery is closing. Southern Pines Brewing Company planned to pour its last beers December 31st, 2025, ending a five-year run. This decision was not made lightly, the company said on Instagram. Our current financial situation and circumstances beyond our control requires us to make this move now so that we can responsibly wind things down as a company. The craft beer industry exploded in North Carolina in recent decades, with breweries popping up across the state, but the industry has faced significant headwinds recently. Tariffs have led to higher costs, and consumer preferences, especially among younger people, have shifted. And finally, apartments plan for old ice rink location. A Raleigh corridor that was once a prime spot for nightlife could see revival as a Charlotte firm is looking at putting apartments in an overlooked Midtown location. A building at 912 Hodges Street was once Club Mars, a raucous entertainment spot in a corridor of town that also featured the nearby Long Branch Saloon. The Club Mars location evolved into a skating rink, even serving as home for the Carolina Hurricanes for a while. The area has been overlooked in recent years, but now Beacon Partners has filed a site plan with the city for 342 apartments along Hodges Street between Wake Forest Road and Atlantic Avenue. The apartments are part of Beacon's plan to help turn the area into a destination submarket by building on the momentum created by Raleigh Ironworks, Salvage Yard, and Dock 1053, which are not far away on Atlantic Avenue. The apartments would also be near the rising East End Market Project. And now we return to the news items in the Triangle Business Journal, beginning with an article written by Cameron Snipes. Raleigh restaurant closes after 30 years. After 30 years in business, Zest Cafe and Home Art in Raleigh has closed. The restaurant announced the closure on its social media accounts on December 27. It's with a heavy heart that we are announcing Zest will be closing, the Post read. The restaurant and retail industries have been increasingly difficult since the pandemic. In addition, increasing costs and tariffs make it necessary for our family to make a change. We are endlessly grateful to our loyal staff and customers. A going-out-of-business sale will be held January 6. Zest opened in North Raleigh's Six Forks Station in December 1995 and was founded by co-owner Ben Swerksy's parents. Ben and his wife, Amanda, took over the establishment around 2013. In addition to the restaurant, the establishment also offered a curated collection of whimsical, handmade, locally sourced and seasoned goods. Six Forks Station includes a variety of major retailers as well as a cinema. Luxury builder plans townhomes close to Raleigh Country Club. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. Builder looks to start townhomes at $395,000 to attract first-time buyers. A luxury home builder in Raleigh is diving into a new area, more attainable housing inside the Beltline. Duke's Properties and Construction will build 35 townhomes near the Raleigh Country Club with a targeted starting price of $395,000. The homes at the corner of Sunnybrook and Poole Roads will be marketed for first-time home buyers. Site work started in November, and the firm expects to start vertical construction in March. The homes should be complete by the end of next summer. The project is called PNTE35. The three-story townhomes will have three bedrooms and three baths. The homes will be more than 1,600 square feet with backyards. Nasir Dukes, managing partner of Dukes Property, said the firm will build luxury finishes that would typically be seen in high-priced homes. The estimated price range will be between $395,000 to $425,000. Emily Brown and Ashley Bomarito of Call Group are handling marketing and sales of the homes. We did this in order to build out an attainable housing market to downtown Raleigh, which is the missing middle, so not affordable housing, Duke said. It's for those that make too much money for affordable housing that can't apply for affordable housing, and then not necessarily in the luxury market. For those that are school teachers, those who work for the city or the state that may not be able to compete with the rising price points of downtown. Dukes Properties built the Dukes at City View, luxury townhomes in the Warehouse District, where prices started around $1 million. The company is now performing site work for Dukes Reserve, estate homes in North Raleigh, that will list for around $5 million. Raleigh's Westgate adds to portfolio, buys Glenwood Avenue dealership. This is written by Kate Tracy. A used car dealership on Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh has sold for nearly $13 million. The property at 7601 Glenwood Avenue, home to Auction Direct USA, was sold to 6421 Westgate Realty LLC for just under $12.9 million, deed records show. The LLC shares an address with Westgate Imports, and its managing member is Asan Khani with Westgate Auto Group of Raleigh, according to filings with the North Carolina Secretary of State's office. The transaction follows Westgate's acquisition of the Auction Direct USA brand in December 2024. Oberlin Investors, an affiliate of Raleigh's APG companies, purchased the property in 2007 for $5.5 million. APG companies has managed it since then. Westgate was leasing the property from APG Capital before the recent purchase. The 8.5-acre site includes a facility totaling 20,156 square feet that was built in 1997. The assessed value of the property is $8.25 million, according to Wake County deed records. This transaction is a great example of a plan coming full circle, Jim Anthony, CEO of APG Company, said in a statement. What began as a fast, uninterrupted transition for the operating business evolved into a long-term real estate outcome, one that rewarded everyone involved. Auction Direct USA's inventory includes a 2024 Porsche for $75,000 on the high end, according to its website, as well as 18 vehicles under $6,000. Westgate has dealerships across the Carolinas. Its presence on Glenwood Avenue includes Westgate Chrysler Dodge Ram and Westgate Jeep across from the Angus Barn. Elsewhere in Raleigh, the company lists Rolls-Royce Motor Cars Raleigh and Westgate Mitsubishi off Capitol Boulevard among its dealerships. Morrisville Theater to close at Park West Village ahead of demolition. And this is written by Kate Tracy. Ohio's Casto plans to pour $75 million into a new look for the space. The final curtain is dropping on a movie theater in the Triangle. B&B Theaters at Morrisville's Park West Village off Chapel Hill Road will close January 4 as part of a redevelopment project, according to Casto, owner of the retail center. The Ohio-based real estate firm previously announced the theater at 3400 Village Marketplace Park West 14 would be demolished to make way for a $75 million mixed-use development. The B&B Theater at Park West opened in 2021 following the onset of the pandemic. It's the theater chain's only location in North Carolina. The space was formerly a location for Charlotte-based Stone Theaters. B&B Theaters at Park West Village has been a place where families gathered, friends met, and memories were made. Brock Bagby, president of B&B Theater, said in a release, "As we prepare to close this location, we want to thank the community in Casto for years of support and invite everyone to come visit one last time during this special time of year." The theater, along with the adjacent Bad Daddy's Burger Bar and former Witch Witch Sandwich Shop, will be demolished. The site will be redeveloped for 250 apartments, a clubhouse, 4,000 square feet of office space, and up to 21,000 square feet of commercial space. Casto has received zoning approval for the project, which it expects to start in the spring. Shannon Dixon, Executive Vice President for Development and Leasing at Casto, said in a release that the theater has been an important part of our community at Park West Village, and we thank them for their partnership over the years. Casto previously told the town of Morrisville that it was taking a financial loss with the theater. Moviegoers won't have far to drive to find an alternative theater, and AMC theaters across Northwest Cary Parkway from Park West Village. Durham MedTech leaves public markets. This is written by Zach Ezone. A medical technology company in Durham is no longer on the public markets as it seeks other means to raise capital and improve its runway. Polarean, P-O-L-A-R-E-A-N, Imaging, is no longer listed on the Alternative Investment Market, or AIM, a subsegment of the London Stock Exchange following a shareholder vote in December. The move comes as the company looks to raise additional capital and extend its cash runway. The company was valued at roughly $1.6 million when shares stopped trading. Polarean expects to complete its re-registration as a private company by January 12, according to a filing with the London Stock Exchange. Polarean expects its cash, $7.3 million at the end of June, to fund it through second quarter 2026. The company has said it requires an additional $20 million in funding to execute its business plan and reach profitability. While it was listed on the London Exchange and maintains an office in the United Kingdom, Polarean is based in Durham. And our last news story is written by Lauren Onasorge. IPO market may open up for SAS, Pendo, and others in the Triangle. Construction services firm Cardinal Infrastructure Group of Raleigh made its NASDAQ debut this month, raising $241.5 million by selling shares at $21 each. But it's not the initial pop that will convince other Triangle companies waiting in the wings to take a chance on their own offerings. What matters is where newly public companies are trading in a month, 2 months, 6 months. That's according to IPO watcher Jeff Zell, a partner at IBO Boutique, who said 2026 could be the year IPOs take off. These companies want to go public in an environment where they know in 6 months their stock price isn't going to be half of what it was when they went public, he said. SAS Institute and Cary is just one of several Triangle companies being eyed as potential IPO targets. Others include unicorns such as Pendo, Jupiter One, and Epic Games. SAS is Cary's largest employer with more than 4,500 local employees, according to TBJ Research. CEO Jim Goodnight announced more than 4 years ago that the firm would be taking the appropriate steps to prepare our business for entry into the public markets, he said. Chief Technology Officer Brian Harris said in October that the team continues preparing for a potential initial public offering, though the timing remains uncertain. Mike Walden, economist at NC State University, expects a strong IPO market in 2026. He sees a growing economy coupled with interest rate dips and moderating inflation as setting the stage for an IPO comeback. In my view, this type of economic environment can support more IPOs, he said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the continuing Project Life, executive health and worker wellness in the Triangle. About this project, Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of this fight for better health in our workplaces. And this is written by Connie Gentry. The business case for building muscle. Executives are trading downtime for dumbbells to regain strength and stay competitive in life and work, and a Raleigh gym owner is lending a hand. As careers climb, fitness often falls, but for executives like Daryl Cromer, rediscovering strength training has become essential to staying healthy and resilient in midlife. Muscles do one of two things, either they grow or they atrophy, said Cromer, whose experience with fitness and strength mirrors that of many executives who find the athleticism they enjoyed in their 20s fading fast as they inch into midlife and spend more time growing their careers than exercising. Turns out climbing the corporate ladder does not contribute to one's physical fitness. Cromer, vice president of a global technology company with a significant Triangle presence, started strength training in high school, continued it through college, and then took a break early in his career. In my early 30s, I got back into strength training for a short period of time, and then I took another long break, said Cromer, who asked that his employer remain anonymous since talking about his fitness regimen is purely personal discussion. In recent years, he resumed strength training and began working with personal trainer Matt McLaughlin, owner of Capital Strength in Raleigh a couple of years ago. McLaughlin opened the gym in 2012 with the hybrid model that he described as between a commercial gym and a small personal training studio where everything is by appointment. It offers both one-on-one and small group training sessions, but all clients follow structured programs that are individualized and scaled to their needs. For Cromer, who deals with scar tissue from an accident in his 20s, as well as having to recover from a torn Achilles tendon during COVID, that personalized attention is critical. As you get older, it takes a lot more to maintain a level of fitness than you used to, and it's important to work with someone who can help you build muscle in a safe way. When you're young and going to the gym, you can push until your muscles are still, you know, are all aching and burning, but that didn't break you. When you're this age, you can break, said Cromer, now in his 50s. His wife and two sons, both recent college graduates, also work with trainers at Capital Strength. The average age of clients at Capital Strength is 45 to 50, although there are two or three people in their 80s, said McLaughlin, adding the mix is increasingly skewing to women, though most people have the impression that strength training is a male-dominated activity. I think women tend to invest more in personal care, and there's been a trend over the last few years for women to see the value in strength training. There are benefits from strength training that you can't really get anywhere else, like building bone mineral density and muscle mass, McLaughlin said. If you're over 50 or 60 and go to a commercial gym, there's usually a lot of young people running around, maybe socializing as much as exercising, and that can be intimidating or frustrating. In a private environment with a coach telling you exactly what to do and how to do it safely with the right equipment, it solves a lot of those problems. Both private sessions and group workouts typically last 60 minutes, and he recommends that clients should be hitting it two or three times per week with a pretty good stimulus, personal strength training, with a certified professional. The quote was, be hitting it two or three times per week with a pretty good stimulus. Personal strength training with a certified sports professional is more costly than a typical gym membership. At Capital Strength, the cost for unlimited group training sessions is $399 per month. By comparison, 10 60-minute sessions with a personal trainer at the YMCA of the Triangle cost $329 for group sessions and $481 for individual sessions. While the expense can be a deterrent for many, surprisingly, it may also become part of the motivation to work out regularly. People often ask me why I pay for a personal trainer, especially now that I have a workout routine. The answer is very simple. If I'm paying money, I will definitely be there for my appointment, Cromer said. It kind of forces that prioritization, and I found my success rate for getting things done really comes down to what's the motivating factor. Having someone hold me accountable and make me be consistent works. He typically schedules workouts around the midday lunch window because the company he works for is based in Asia, so his mornings are often obligated to communicating with associates or business partners in Asia or Europe. Frequent business travel can interrupt the flow of workouts, but he resumes a 2 or 3 day strength training schedule when in the Triangle. Traveling to the West Coast, Cromer said he takes early morning flights and returns on a red eye, getting in and out quickly to maintain as much workout consistency as possible. McLaughlin helps clients mitigate the challenges of travel, often resulting in poor diet and disrupted sleep, by identifying, quote, little strategies that will keep them on point, he said. But the good news is you can't really ruin long-term progress in 1 week. He has become a fan of a couple of trending fitness movements, and he has found that fitness wearables, depending on how an individual utilizes them, can have a positive impact. McLaughlin wears a Garmin Instinct to track his steps and as a timer for his runs. The biggest benefit on a day-to-day usage level is seeing my step count, which is a great proxy for how active you are. If you're getting 8,000 steps a day and not losing the body fat that you want, you can kick that up to 10,000 steps, and over time, there's a measurable increase of activity, he said. But some people can get neurotic about the wearable, so it can become a source of stress, which is not okay. The surging popularity of GLP-1 medications, receptor agonists for treating type 2 diabetes that have also promoted weight loss through appetite suppression, was initially concerning for him. My first reaction was that I didn't like it, but then I looked at current health trends and realized if done properly, the GLP-1s could be life-saving for someone, and at a population level, it could help reverse the obesity trend, he said. The problem is that GLP-1s don't address habits, and replacing bad habits with good habits is the essence of his fitness philosophy. Make the bad habits hard to do and the good habits easy to do, and streamlining your schedule so it's easy to squeeze in a workout, he said. The best long-term fitness results come from an identity shift. Instead of a short-term vision like you're going to do this fitness schedule to lose 5 pounds, become the person who works out. I call it the upward spiral, where you change a couple habits and you start feeling good, and then an identity shift happens because working out is fun, because it's beneficial to your life. And with our remaining time, we will turn to the viewpoint page. The Business Journal welcomes letters to the editor. And this one concerns fiscal policy, and it's written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, Property Tax Merits Reform, Not Repeal. North Carolina House Speaker Destin Hall has created a 23-member select committee to evaluate potential reforms of the state's property tax system. That's a fine idea, a sensible reaction to surging property values and changing fiscal conditions. But members ought not be distracted by out-of-state chatter about repealing the property tax altogether. That's a bad idea destined to fail. Annual levies on the value of residential, commercial, and industries property produce 70% of local revenue. The property tax is stable, reliable, and doesn't distort economic decisions nearly as much as income or sales taxes do. All taxes are paid using past or present income, and all are by definition coercive. They take money away from the people who earned it, so governments can fund public safety, infrastructure, and other services for which the collective public benefits can be reasonably expected to exceed the costs. And we'll jump to the end of this article as he discusses needing to keep a property tax to avoid increases in a sales tax, which is not broad or efficient enough. And he ends the article with, by all means, let's make sure North Carolinians can challenge unjust valuations and cash-poor homeowners aren't dispossessed. More generally, the General Assembly should continue tax reforms that reduce special carve-outs and broaden tax bases in order to lower rates, but replacing property taxes isn't realistic. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.